Chapter 5, New Sights, New Sounds. By 7 o'clock the next morning, Edith Brown and others were being led through the labyrinths of the bazaar. To the girl just arrived from England, this was all new and exciting. Here they were, shopping for supplies for their journey on to Delhi, and the streets were as crowded with shoppers in early morning as a London street would be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was all so completely different. Yesterday, after disembarking, they had gone to the Great Western Hotel, where they had luxuriated in freshwater baths after the weeks at sea. Following a welcome time of rest, they went together to the service at the Free Church, which was near the hotel. It was somehow appropriate that the first day of this new life should be marked by attendance at a church service. The weary travelers retired early to their respective rooms. From the window of her bedroom, Dr. Brown looked out at the entrance to Bombay Harbor, where the brilliant moon had transformed the sea into a liquid silver. She was loath to turn away from the lovely scene to face the new and unpleasant experience of being surrounded by a mosquito net in the bed. The next morning, she felt as if she had spent the night in a cage. On this Monday morning, the kaleidoscope sounds and sights of the bazaar were enthralling. There was a riot of color in the garments of the people, with hardly two dressed alike, and the costumes represented all the provinces and states of India. Very startling to the Westerner was the fact that some people wore so little clothing that they could hardly be called dressed at all, and some of the children scamping around were absolutely naked. The shops of the bazaar were rows of open front, elevated stalls where the proprietor sat on the floor among his wares. Some of the vendors were asleep. Some looked lazy, but the great majority were eagerly and noisily hawking their goods. "Mem Sahib, lovely silk, please sit down and look. Mem Sahib, beautiful jewelry, lovely stones, just have a look. Mem Sahib, what you want? We have everything. We have what you want. Mem Sahib, beautiful oranges, bananas, tangerine, you buy from us. Our price is best." The noise was so great that the shoppers could hardly hear one another. Under the watchful eye of Mr. Briggs and the expert guidance of a bearer from the hotel, Dr. Brown and Dr. Farrer purchased the supplies needed for their rail journey. They bought a large supply of fruit, for it really seemed too great a wonder to see it in such abundance after the skimpy supplies of England. Following breakfast, Mr. Briggs drove Dr. Brown and Dr. Farrer out to the Kama Hospital for Women, since this was the type of zanana work into which they were both going to enter. They welcomed the opportunity to see the operation of this kind of hospital. It was for many years considered to be the finest women's hospital in all India in terms of buildings and work. After the visit to Kama, Mr. Briggs took the women on a sightseeing tour of Bombay through the European section and then through the colorful shopping area. High point of the tour was the visit to Malabar Hill and the beautiful Hanging Gardens. From that prominent position, they looked down on the beautiful homes which lined one side of Marine Drive, viewing the beach and sea on the opposite side of the curving road. They could understand how this lovely sight below them, when illuminated at night, could earn the picturesque name, the Queen's Necklace. At 8 o'clock that night, the two doctors arrived at the railway station, accompanied by their personal baggage, baskets of fruit and other edibles, as well as containers of drinking water. They also had been introduced to the inseparable companion of the Indian traveler, the bedroll. The long distances one had to travel in India and the absence of hotels meant that the traveler always had to carry the bedding necessary for sleeping on the train. The station master, solicitous of their comfort and welfare, had put the women into a reserved zanana compartment. Although it was a compartment for 8 passengers, they were the only occupants. It was very comfortable, but they soon found that they got decidedly dusty no matter what they did. The countryside, as it flashed past the train, was a study in contrasts. The earth was brown, parched, and baked by the blazing sun until it looked like separate pieces of one mighty rock. Occasionally, the brown would be interrupted by a patch of green, and nearby could be seen a well with a strange-looking wheel being turned by camels. This device drew the water up from the well and poured it into little irrigation channels, where it helped give evidence of life in the midst of the sun-baked land. In contrast to the drabness of the earth, Edith Brown observed many trees and shrubs in bloom, some brilliant reds, others purple, yellow, and white. Their names were unknown to her, and she made a mental note to find out about them. Alongside the railway lines, she saw the brilliant plumage of parakeets and parrots. There were some brilliant green and red birds which she did not recognize, and as they flew past in a flock, they created a rippling wave of sparkling color. The towns and cities through which the train passed etched unforgettable pictures in her mind. The little grass mud and grass huts along the way, with nearly naked children playing in the dirt outside, seemed to shriek out the pitiful existence of the people. Beggars on the platform, wheedling small coins from the travelers, touched the heart of Edith Brown. She saw here blind people for whom a simple cataract operation might have made the difference between light and darkness. She saw grotesquely distorted limbs for which the surgeon's touch could have meant helpful correction. And she saw small children being brought into this deplorable scene when some action by concerned Christian people could have meant the redemption of these children. Perhaps it was at this point that she resolved always to care for the orphans and neglected children who were brought to her, a practice she maintained for most of her life. When the train arrived in Delhi on Wednesday afternoon, the missionaries had gathered on the platform to welcome them. As she looked around, Edith Brown noted that it was an imposing and very English station, except for the people and the noise. This new missionary could not help seeing the comparisons between the new life and the old life which she had left behind in England. The one would often match up against the other. Even the parched countryside did not escape this comparison, for she said, "Some of the scenery on the way up might also have been English moorland, only with a sandy, dusty look." It was ironical how things conspired to remind her of home and her loved ones during those first few days. As she entered the mission house in Delhi, weary from the long, dirty train journey, she welcomed the promise of tea as soon as she had a chance to clean up a little. Quickly she came to the table, and to her amazement, she found that the meal was being served on dishes of exactly the same pattern as those used in her own home in England. The life of this city did not please Edith Brown. She found that the food was good and there were no physical hardships, except mosquitoes. The evening weather was perfect and they did not go out in the extreme heat of the day. They made perfunctory calls on other missionaries, but in it all, she missed a spiritual fellowship which she had anticipated in her work. To her, this was a great trial. In the mission house where she was staying, there were formal prayers at breakfast, but no Bible readings and no prayer meetings. Still, she and her friends managed to have their private study time and prayer, although it was extremely difficult to find a time suitable for all. After dinner, it was the accepted pattern for all the company to sit in the drawing room and play games, but these newcomers managed to escape for most of the evening, going to another room where they sang hymns together until they retired for the night. On Saturday, her medical career in India began when her first patient was brought to her. The woman was in a purdah palanquin carried by two men. She had kidney trouble and extensive dropsy, but she wanted medicine that would make her well at once. She refused to come into the little hospital for prolonged treatment. Dr. Brown paid a number of visits to the Dufferin Dispensary, where a friend was in charge. She considered her first day on the whole very amusing. The women who were there as outpatients kept speaking to her and wondered why she did not speak to them. They asked her friend if she could read and write, as she did not speak. The friend replied in their language that she was a Bari Dr. Sahib just come out from England and could not yet speak their language. The same predicament followed on Sunday morning when she attended the Indian church service with the other newcomers. They could not join in the hymns or prayers, but they offered up many silent prayers for the continual stream of visitors who came in on their way to the river. The 50 school children present made a colorful picture. They have bare feet, pink and white striped skirts down to their ankles, and white calico chudders, or scarves, very white teeth and eyeballs. Walking back with them after the service, she found herself holding a tiny brown hand. The child continually looked up, chattered, and laughed. She was a jolly young thing, but Edith could not make out her name. However, as she wrote, smiles went a long way. The church service had been very different from anything that she had encountered before, and it was quite a change from the staid solemnity of the Brethren Assembly. A constant stream of visitors walked in and out. Birds flew in and fluttered around before finding their way out again, and she was intrigued by a lizard gliding across the floor, but no one seemed to be disturbed by these things. The service, which had begun in Urdu, had switched into Hindi by the preacher as he realized that most of the visitors were Hindus on the way to the river for a ritual bath. About 4 o'clock the next morning, Edith Brown was awakened by a tremendous clamor, with shouting and singing at a distance. There had been an eclipse of the moon during the night, requiring the purification of everything in the homes of all the Hindus. All food and water in the houses had to be thrown away as unclean. The people had to go to the river to bathe and to bring fresh water for household purposes. There seemed to be a belief that during an eclipse, an evil spirit had gotten possession of the moon. During her short time in Delhi, Dr. Brown visited several dispensaries, but it was in St. Stephen's Hospital that she performed her first operation in India. On Wednesday, November 19th, she was asked to look at the eyes of an old woman patient who had been there several weeks waiting for help. Dr. Brown saw that surgery performed at once could save the sight of the patient, and she was happy to agree to the request that she perform the operation herself. She was also called into consultation on a very bad midwifery case. The family had been asked whether they wished to send for the civil surgeon or the Dr. Miss Sahib from England. They agreed to send for the Miss Sahib. She found that the patient, about 26 years old, was very small and deformed and had been treated cruelly by the local midwives. By the time the doctor arrived on the case, the patient had a very high fever and had not eaten any food for 3 days. They worked on her for 3 hours to save her life. This was an early introduction to an area of medical concern which was to engage Dr. Brown's attention for many years, the intolerable ignorance and carelessness of the village dai, or midwife. It had been planned for Miss Brown to go up to Ludhiana, 180 miles to the north, where she would work and study for 1 year. Afterward, she would return to Delhi and, using that as a base, move out to open up medical work in one of the new sections. Accordingly, she had been assigned rooms in the mission bungalow, and there she would leave much of her luggage rather than taking it to Ludhiana. Emily Pogson was received as a most welcome guest when she came down to escort the doctor back to Ludhiana. This meant that she was now moving on to a place where she could get down to the task for which she had prepared so laboriously and traveled so far. She could heal the sick women and children and at the same time unashamedly tell them of God's love for them in Jesus Christ. Miss Pogson also was welcome because her sister, Alice Pogson, had been one of the last persons Miss Brown had seen at the quayside in England. She recalled their pleasant visits together and the way the experienced missionary had tried to prepare the new one for the difficulties and joys which lay ahead. Already she felt that she knew Ludhiana from those previous conversations. On the train trip, a bond of friendship was forged which would span many years and withstand many trials.